Hey gang, welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Patrick Slattery, and I'm here to say, check out the CoCertified app. You know me. Would I steer you wrong? CoCertified, it lets you know if it's kosher or not. If it's not kosher, it'll say so. It's stuff you want to know. Maybe you're keeping kosher. Some of us are. Maybe you're not. Some of us aren't. Try it. You'll like it. Okay? Try it. Trust me. CoCertified. Go to thekosherquestion.com. Also, because it only costs $1.95 or $2.95. I think it's $2.95. It only costs $2.95. You're going to have some shekels left over. Send those leftover shekels to RBN. You go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button. One of these days, I'm going to be asking for shekels for myself, but that day hasn't come yet. So go to CoCertified, and with your leftover shekels, and there should be some leftover, go to RBN. That's always an important thing to do. Today, I'm taking calls. I'm looking forward to calls, and the number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. I'm looking in my water bowl, and I'm seeing that Mr. T didn't fill up my water bowl. so I guess I'll be dashing off during the break to fill up my water bowl. Maybe he's getting revenge on me, or maybe he's suggesting that I do what he does, which you can imagine. If his water bowl is not filled up, what he might do for water, but I don't do that, not yet at least. So today I'm going to start off by talking about this new article from Ron Unz. Ron Unz, as you may know, in 2012 wrote an article called The Myth of American Meritocracy. And that has a lot to do with why I'm here right now in so many ways. 2012, that was actually the year I started broadcasting with Dr. Duke, right about the same time that article came out. And I came to Dr. Duke's attention after having published an article on Professor Kevin McDonald's website, his the Occidental Quarterly, Occidental Review website. And that I had written in, I guess, 2011, and it had to do with Elena Kagan, Elena Kagan is a Supreme Court justice, and I wrote an article showing really pretty clearly how all her life she had benefited from her Jewish privilege, from Jewish congressmen, from Jewish university professor or university presidents, always hiring her, giving her chances, giving her jobs that normally she would be considered unqualified for. And I also showed how she had, pretty conclusively, how once she was the head of Harvard's law school, that she used her position as the head of this elite academic program to pass the favor on and hire at least half Jews. If you include a couple of people who had been married to Jews, it was well over 50% of the hires. And then also showed that when this came to light, she was accused of ethnic bias, but not pro-Jewish bias, pro-white bias. It was interesting. That's what got Dr. Duke's attention. But shortly after that, and my first appearance on Dr. Duke's show, I believe, was late August in 2012. I then did a because, you know, Harvard Law School, I did a an article on admissions into Harvard Did I do Harvard? I think I stuck to Harvard, into Harvard University, using the provost number and also using the Hillel Association for as a proxy for Jewish admissions. And I didn't have any measure of capability of academic qualification, but I just showed that given that data set, that that a not a Jew, a Jewish 18-year-old would be 40 times more likely to be admitted to Harvard than a non-Jewish white. About 42 times, actually. That was the data. And that was something that was very interesting to Dr. Duke as well. And so he had me back on, and before you know it, I was on all the time. Well, then in November of that month, almost as if he had been reading my mind, but obviously he had been working on this for some time, Ron Unz, who is the publisher of The American Conservative, Ron Unz puts out an article called The Myth of American Meritocracy. And it was pursuing the same line of questioning I had been. But Ron Unz is a very good researcher, and he's also somebody with far more resources than I have. And he had extended the study past Harvard, in fact, past the 8 Ivy League schools, and included maybe another 8 or so other elite institutions, including a few from the California state system, which had banned, at least formally banned, racial considerations in admissions. And so he did a very interesting study, and he also collected a lot of data on academic achievement, the academic standing, the academic achievement and qualifications of the populations that were applying for admissions to these universities. And that's, of course, you know, we could say, oh, well, Jews are 40 times more likely to be admitted. That's one thing. And then the Jews can come back and say, yeah, but we're 40 times better. And, of course, plenty of people, Jews and non-Jews, have made this argument, whether you're talking about Steven Pinker, the one-time Harvard, I think he's elsewhere now. He's a Canadian Jew. He makes that argument. I'm sorry, Jared Taylor tends to make that argument. Stephen Molyneux has made that argument. Yes, Stephen Molyneux, whose Jewish ancestry is in question. There's actually an article on the Daily Stormer from the past 24 hours going into that, because at various forums he alternatively claims Jewish ancestry and no Jewish ancestry. But he's made the claim that Jews have an average IQ of 130, which where he got that from, I have no idea. But he's, you know, some people like him, and maybe he's brought in some people into the realm of knowing things, but I think he's pretty much a fraud and a charlatan. Anyway, back to Ron Unz, who is a Jew and a very honest Jew. So he included in this November 28th, 2012 article, The Myth of American Meritocracy, these measures of qualification, including he managed to get lists of people who were semi-finalists in the National Merit Scholarship program. And, you know, you're talking about several tens of thousands of people. And when you have large numbers, you can use these statistical tools. And he did an analysis of last names. And you don't have to go through every single last name and try to look it up. But if you know, for instance, that Cohens, like Cohen and Goldberg and Shapiro, and, you know, pick a few other names that are distinctively Jewish and almost always Jewish and almost never non-Jewish. And if you know, you know, from maybe looking at lists of many members of many lists of members of many synagogues, for instance, and you know that these people with distinctive Jewish names make up, say, 30% of the Jewish population, for instance, 30% of the Jewish population. And then you look at a university, and if you find 300 people with these very distinctive, always Jewish names like Shapiro and Cohen, and you see that there's 300 people at that university, you can pretty much do the algebra. There would probably be 1,000 Jews there, because people with that set of names makes up 30%. He did the same thing for Koreans and Chinese. Kim is a very distinctive Korean name, very common too. And there are some names where you can't tell the difference whether it's Korean or Chinese, but there's some where you absolutely can. And so Zhang, which would be Z-H-A-N-G, that is always Chinese. It's never Korean. Kim, K-I-M, is always Korean, never Chinese. Lee, you don't know. So what you do is you can calculate what's the percentage of people with these distinct names among the greater ethnic group, and then you find them, you do the algebra. He did that with the various Asian names, with the Jewish names, with Hispanic names, Rodriguez, Hernandez, Ramirez, what have you. And he came up with what would be pretty reliable, and which actually in retrospect have been corroborated by even by his critics. So using this, he was able to find that even correcting for academic achievement, well, he finds, first of all, that the Jews only represent about 6% of the elite students in the United States, yet they're getting about 25% of the positions at elite universities. And, also checking out, blacks and Hispanics and Asians and non-whites. Well, compared to non-whites in general, Jews are 10 times more likely to get in. Compared to non-Jewish whites, Jews are more like 15 times more likely to get in, because non-Jewish whites are by far the most discriminated against. Now, what was very interesting about his new piece that's come out 6 years later as part of this really amazing series called American Pravda, and I've talked about one of the American Pravda articles maybe a couple of months ago, but this is something that y'all will want to look into. He confesses or admits that when he wrote this article in 2012, the headline, I mean, the first many paragraphs were all about discrimination at Harvard and other elite colleges against Asians, and that this was like a 25,000 word article. It was, could have probably made up a small book even. It was quite large. And it wasn't until late in the article that he talked about whites. And this was something that I had kind of complained about. I mean, I really valued the article, but, in the ensuing years, Dr. Duke and I have been talking about this article for the past 6 years. And from time to time, I would say, he was emphasizing the Asian discrimination against Asians, and yet his own study showed, especially if you went to the appendix, his own study showed that the real discrimination was much more against non-Jewish whites. Well, in his new article, he says that was an intentional strategy, that he had intentionally done that, because if he had led off with that it's primarily whites who are being discriminated against and it's Jews who are doing the discriminating, that it would have never been talked about, that nobody would have touched it. The New York Times wouldn't have touched it. Nobody would have touched it. He said what he did is bury the lead, bury the most important finding, because by having the lead be Asians are being discriminated against by whites at these schools, it would get into mainstream publications. Now, he published it in his own publication, The American Conservative, which is small, and wouldn't have the impact. But his article was widely written about in the New York Times, in all of these other places, and wound up leading to a lawsuit, which is now in the headlines. It's a lawsuit by Asian groups against Harvard University. Now, not only that, he says that one of the people that he had quoted extensively, who had written a book of some years earlier on Jews at Harvard, Caribel, I forgot the first name, his last name's Caribel, and who had, you know, written this wonderful feel-good story about how Jews had overcome WASP discrimination and now dominated the schools. Not just the student body, but the administration. Feel-good school. Feel-good story. He'd quoted him widely in it, and then sent, before he even published the article, he sent Caribel an advanced copy of it to read, knowing Caribel would read it. And thinking correctly that Caribel would look at it and wind up notifying the main Jewish activist groups not to just to ignore it. But meanwhile, of course, the mass media was covering it, but covering it from the anti-Asian discrimination angle, but ignoring the Jewish privilege angle of it. I don't know. I mean, as far as the strategy goes, apparently it worked. But here we are now, and now he's writing about how this was how the main discrimination is against whites, and you know, even in this article, like in his series American Pravda, he's saying all sorts of things, like he believes Israel's behind 9/11, okay. That he never looked into it earlier. I know I've talked about this. He didn't look into it much earlier because of what some people derisively describe as conspiratards putting out all of these crazy theories. He didn't bother looking into it. But when he finally got around to it and went through all of the smokescreen of these crazy ideas, he concluded that he thinks Israel's behind it. Doesn't talk too much about the methods, but does talk a lot about the motivations. Anyway, so one thing he said in this recent article about American meritocracy, about Jewish privilege at Harvard, is that he basically denies the Holocaust in the middle of it. He says that Jews have been using the Holocaust really in part as a means of getting into these places because they can signal their Jewish identity and self-identification to admissions officers in these essays by, you know, writing about their being the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. And then he notes, you know, the irony that, of course, this Holocaust narrative is largely fictional, but pretty strong. We will be right back.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one from Amazon.com. I just wanted you to know I saw my doctor and I laughed because he said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it." I have been taking Extendivite. I had borderline high blood pressure, heart flutter, high cholesterol. I changed my diet and included Extendivite with an amazing turnaround for the better. A few months later, I had a doctor's appointment and took a stress test. I passed. No heart flutter. Blood pressure was perfect. My doctor even took me off my medicine. I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. This stuff works, and I'm so grateful for Extendivite. Thank you, Justin G. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Wow, what a song. What a song. Can you imagine all those Jewish people playing that song? That's Hava Nagila. Just imagine it. Okay, so I'm back. It's Patrick Slattery with National Bugle Radio, and I do like that song. And today we're talking about Ron Unce's article. I was looking back at my own article, and I'm not sure if I'd published it before or after Ron Unce's article. What I'm seeing is from December of 2012, a month later. Be that as it may, I'd already done the research. But it was amazing. I guess great minds think alike. But here's the thing. So Ron Unce used the Hillel data. Hillel is the Jewish Students Association. It's an organization, a nationwide organization. They have chapters at pretty much every college campus. I'd used it. Ron Unce had used it. Now, there's been some controversy over it. I know Mike Enoch at the Daily Show, or now called Tedious, and he's kind of he faulted Ron Unce for using this data, saying that it wasn't reliable or whatnot. Ron Unce has a good rebuttal to it, but there's another issue with the Hillel data. And of course, the Hillel data really can be verified by using the same types of techniques that that Ron Unce used for measuring the Jewish or Korean or Chinese share of national merit scholarships. And I haven't done that confirmation yet. I will, but this is the thing when. Like our people, like Ron Unce, he made a small fortune in Silicon Valley. He's a smart guy, and I'm glad he did. He's a Jewish guy, but he's a smart guy, and he's doing well. He's doing good work. I haven't made a small fortune, and so I'm still working normie work, and I don't have enough time to do all of the research I'd like to do. And unfortunately, I mean, partly we don't have the means of collecting donations. But also, our people, our listeners, tend to be a little less open with their purse strings than Jewish donors are. And I don't mean to be mean, but it's a fact. The Jewish donors give lots of money to their causes. And, you know, I know John Stadtmiller, who operates on an extremely efficient budget, but yet he has to ask our people for funds, and you want to keep this going. It's so important. I wouldn't be able to get my message out without RBN. So it's so important. Anyway, there's been another issue, another controversy with the Hillel data. It had been pretty steady over the years, and you can use, as I did, the Wayback Machine on archive.org, the Wayback Machine, which has it archives web pages periodically. And so you can go to the Hillel data from 2012 or 2006 or whatever, for Harvard or for Yale or for Princeton or for Duke or Stanford or all sorts of other schools, George Washington University. And you do see a great deal of consistency, which doesn't necessarily mean accuracy, but consistency. We can confirm this, and I will be confirming it as soon as I get a chance to. But here's the thing. All of the sudden, and you know, Dr. Duke and I have been making a lot of noise about this. You know, Ron Unz has an excellent article, but I'll say Dr. Duke and I have been making a lot more noise about this than anybody. And we've been talking about the Hillel data. And all of a sudden, about it maybe a year and a half ago, the Hillel figures from Harvard suddenly changed. And the change happened first at Harvard, but Ron Unz refers to a similar change happening at some of the other schools. They're getting the message. They're getting the memo that we're talking about it, that Dr. Duke and I are talking about it, and then other people are picking up on it. And so what happened a year and a half ago or so is, after decades, well, at least, I mean, the Wayback Machine, you can go back maybe 15 years or so, of very consistently reporting about 25% Jewish enrollment in the undergrads and about the same in graduate school, suddenly the Harvard numbers go to 12%, just like overnight. It wasn't a gradual decline. It was overnight. All of a sudden they say 12% for Jewish enrollment. But they say all of a sudden said, 60-something percent for graduate school. And, you know, Dr. Duke and I have had a lot of discussions about it because he looked at that 67% or whatever figure for graduate school, and he wanted to talk about it. And I know that Jews are way overrepresented in the graduate schools at Harvard and elsewhere, but that particular figure, you know, I had questions about. So we'll be talking about this after the break. I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to libertystickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's libertystickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery. And in just a moment, I'm going to go to Jeremy from Kentucky. But I just wanted to get back to the Hallel data. I mentioned how suddenly at Harvard, the undergraduate Jewish population figure that Hallel puts out there went from 25% suddenly down to 12%. And I thought it was very odd. And I thought that they were intentionally manipulating the data because of, frankly, because of, Ron Unz to an extent, but, you know, David Duke and I have been making hay of it. Ron Unz put a lot of good data out there, but wasn't making hay of it in terms of accusing Jews of privilege, as vocally as we were. He was in his article. He actually did make that accusation, but it was really, really buried strategically, apparently. And now Ron Unz is pointing out that after Harvard switched its data, the other schools are starting, the Hallel associations are switching their data. All of a sudden they're changing their data. And it's very interesting. Last word about Ron Unz, this series that he's putting out, series of articles on it's called American Pravda. It's really, really interesting, and he's getting into all sorts of aspects of Jewish power and Jewish, involvement in things. 9/11, I think he's got something out there on the Kennedy assassination. It's very, very interesting and very, very important. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Slattery, coming in loud and clear.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm at my paint job. I didn't know if there was an echo, so I'm in a totally empty room. If there's a problem, just let me know. I'll switch it off speaker. But
it sounds like the word of God with that echo in there. I like it.
Is it? Okay, if it's a good echo, I guess that's fine. But anyway, speaking of Word of God, I think you'll find it interesting that Hillel in the Hebrew was Satan's original name before he fell from grace. So I think that...
H-I-L-L-E-L?
I think it's H-E-L-L. H-E-L-E-L. But, I mean, it may be spelled different, but I think it would come from the same Hebrew root word.
Remember that Hebrew doesn't write down the vowels. They only write down the consonants.
Right. So there would have just been... You know, so that could actually, it probably is the same thing. I just would think that the person that named that group probably knew that. That's just an interesting little thing. Maybe we could look it up for kicks and grins later. But it's interesting that this Ron Unsky brings up the power that Jews exercised because of the Holocaust. You did mention that, correct, earlier in your monologue?
Yes.
That's fascinating, and it's the same stance that... you know, Stephen Steinlight takes, as you know, I bring him up a lot. Steinlight, a very intelligent Jew, who understands that the demise of the American culture and the demographics will be a bad thing for Jews as a power in America. He actually sees that, and he even mentions that the new immigrants that come in will not have the guilt, the white guilt of the Holocaust, one of the things he mentions in his paper. So I guess my question is then, how do we get people talking about the Holocaust, just like Mr. Unz got people talking about overrepresentation in Harvard and in the various universities? That's the question.
Yeah. And I have a friend who I'll be bringing on again. We haven't talked about this specifically, but he's done a lot of research into it. The Holocaust, it is tough, and there's this strategic decision that has to be made about when to talk about it, because right now it's not just the third rail; it is the it is the barbed wire on the third rail. It is the most difficult thing to talk about, and I mean, you can talking about Jewish power in general is hard enough, but to say that the Holocaust narrative isn't exactly what Hollywood would have you believe, that is really tough. So there's this strategic how do you talk about it? Well, we talk about it ourselves. I mean, it's a good question. I don't exactly have an answer for it, and I mean, even myself, I've read David Irving's books, and I think they're very good, and I think there's big problems with the Holocaust narrative, just as there are big problems with the 9/11, official 9/11 narrative. But sometimes it gets hard to pinpoint exactly what we think did happen. But I don't know, maybe the part of the answer is rather than presenting an alternative of what did happen, focus on what we can at least most easily and credibly show did not happen initially. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, here's what I've noticed. As I got familiar with the works of Solzhenitsyn, and I really got familiar with it by reading Dr. Duke's book, Secret Behind Communism. But I have this, I had a friend, he's passed away now, he was an older man and a very, very intelligent person that was, read a lot of Solzhenitsyn, but he would not pick up a David Duke book. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to have discussions about the Ukrainian Holodomor and the Bolshevik murders in Russia. We were able to have conversations about that and dance around the Holocaust a little bit. But what I found was that when you bring things like the Holodomor to the attention of people, they don't know that. They never knew that happened. So I guess where I'm going with that is if the power of the Jewish people is the Holocaust, you don't have to confirm or deny it, because how can you confirm or deny something that's never been thoroughly investigated, for one? But two, what about the Ukrainians? Why don't we have the museums to the Ukrainians, to the Russian peoples, to the Poles who were murdered in World War II? And so I guess what you would have to do is you would have to come at it just like Unz did, Ron Unz. He came at it from a different angle, right? Very intelligent, by focusing on the persecution of the Asian peoples. If you focus on the persecution of these other racial groups, because at the end of the day, if you say, yeah, Jews are overrepresented, well, the Jews are going to come back and say, well, we deserve it because of the Holocaust. What about the Ukrainians? What about the 50 million plus Chinese people that died under communism? Where is their, you know, right? So I guess you just throw the numbers out there and you get people to talking about all of the other things. And if you could get someone like Unz or write more people like him to get their, to push this mainstream, I think that's one way that you could break the power of the alleged Holocaust.
And Unz,
putting it up against the other murders.
Well, and Unz looks like he's ready to come, you know, full out on these types of things. I'm very interested in what his next American Pravda article is going to be about. I know personally when I'm talking to people privately, for instance, and the subject of the Holocaust comes up, I don't feel like I have to confirm or deny exactly what happened. But I'll say something like, well, to the extent that Jews in the 1930s and 1940s were enduring hostility from various European people, you have to put it in the context of what had been going on in that part of the world for people's living memories, including the Russian Revolution, including the war communism, the early stage of the Russian Revolution and the Civil War. And, of course, the forced starvation of Ukrainians and others in what you refer to as a Holodomor. And also, that's all in Soviet Russia, but the rise of the Bund as the Jewish Bund in Poland as a very strong political group, the takeover of Hungary in the aftermath of World War I for about 6 months by an entirely Jewish Bolshevik party, a similar take over in Saxony in Germany, in some provinces of Germany were completely taken over by entirely Jewish communists for short periods of time. But this is something that, like, can you imagine if for 6 months California or Texas was taken over by a group, Jews or whatever? You think 10 years from now, 15 years from now, people would remember it? Of course they would. And so people had reasons to be suspicious and fearful of Jews. Jews were playing a very hardball game, and they were very ruthless in their own sake. And so the idea that there may have been a backlash against them, and if people are going to call that the Holocaust, well, okay, but let's put it into context. I don't know if that's the best way to go about it, but this is how I talk to people.
Yeah, often I say that the National Socialists in Germany, they were a knee-jerk reaction to Bolshevism because the Holodomor was going on the year Hitler came to power. So just in the next country over, you got millions of people being starved out, and the Germans knew it. So it's
and
like
Hitler's talking about Judeo-Bolsheviks, right? Judeo-Bolshevism.
Right. And you don't have to start throwing Roman salutes and wearing swastikas. You just have to point out, hey, this movement in Germany was a reaction. It didn't just happen in a vacuum.
Yeah, so to what was going on in neighboring countries and to what had happened in the past 15 years.
Right. But I think that's one thing we can start pushing mainstream. But I did want to hit on something else before I go that we touched on last week, and that's this issue of civic nationalism, Trump's civic nationalism, how it resembles the Steinlight plan, and is that good or bad? You said something really good on Stormfront in response to that it was a stepping stone, and a stepping stone is neutral. You can get on that stone. That stone is required no matter what direction we go. We're not going to go to straight-up ethnic nationalism. We're going to have to go to civic nationalism first. That's the bridge. And like I was telling George last week from Greece, it's the guy called it a gateway drug. He's trying to be clever. It is. Civic nationalism is the gateway drug to a true ethnic movement for white Europeans. And so that makes it irrelevant. Is Trump controlled? Is he not? Is he on the Steinlight plan? Well, it doesn't matter. What he's doing is good, because instilling a sense of 1960s civic nationalism, that's what we're going to have. That's the stepping stone we need to go to the next level.
Yeah. And you know something? I think people could have wondered about Trump being the shill or, you know, secretly working for Jewish power during the election. But he's been president. If he wanted, he could have, you know, installed himself as president. And then I know he does. I mean, I know he is playing certain games with Jews. But when you look at the entirety of his presidency and describing himself as a nationalist, standing up for the people at the white people in Charlottesville, these are things he absolutely didn't have to do and created massive problems for him. And his response to immigration and sending troops to the border, and he's doing all sorts of things that just would not be in anybody's script for him. So yeah, not that he's always right. He makes lots of mistakes, but I think he's learning, and I do think he's on our side.
Yeah, and I've evolved, and my views have come a long way in the last year. Andrew England of the Daily Stormer has helped me really see the connection between white nationalism and civic nationalism and this movement that Trump is going in. Very intelligent person, seems to me, and I've interacted with him in the comment section. But there seems to be a split on that side. He's had this split with Eric Stryker. I'm not sure that I understand it, and I don't want to bring it all up on the air.
But and I know, say that I don't know it. I have no firsthand knowledge of it, I'll just say.
Right, because I sent you the information. But, like, I just know that they're going in two kind of different directions there. England's pushing more of the civic nationalism and the Trump movement. And I think but I got to tell you, I like what Stryker has to say. I don't know a lot about him. I know that he admittedly comes from a leftist background. I think he said he was actually communist in the past, and he's come to, you know, nationalism. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. I think I heard
well,
that out of his own
some,
mouth.
Something like that. He's a very young man, and so any past he had in this political movement or that political movement would have been pretty short. And I think both he and Anglin are very intelligent and very well worth having in the conversation. And I don't like having, you know, rancor and internal bickering and whatnot inside the movement. I think they're both very intelligent individuals.
Yeah, and I just wanted to clarify my stance on this. I mean, is Trump in the Steinlein movement? I don't know. I know that you don't get to be as powerful as Trump without rubbing elbows with Jewish gangsters, period. He had to have been part of them. And whatever, they probably have a lot of hooks in him still. But I think what he's doing is good for us, and I support it, and that's where I stand on it. But I do like to bring up Steinlein because a lot of people don't know about him and, you know, what this guy admits is just crazy. If you read his paper, it's very interesting that he openly admits the power of the Holocaust being used by the Jews, and he openly admits that Jews have always been behind immigration and that they're going way too fast with it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and of course, Stephen Steinlein is a Jew who is interested in what's best for the Jew, but his idea of what's best for the Jew is slowing it down because we're going so fast that the goyim are going to know and we're going to come to a big crash. And that is a very rational thing to think, even if you are completely pro-Jewish.
I think that Trump is the white lash that he was fearing, but I think that the Jews on his side, like Stephen Cohen that you quote a lot, and Stephen Miller, I think that these Jews see Steinlein's point and they've attached themselves onto Trump. So it's hard to tell if they're pushing Trump or if Trump's in league with them. I don't know. I think Trump is just Trump. He's an opportunist and he's going in the direction he thinks he should go.
With Stephen Cohen, because I've been following him for 30 years reading his stuff, and I think he's 90% at least is just somebody who takes his own academic work seriously and is simply being honest. He is Jewish, and while from time to time he will talk about the Jewish role in the Holodomor, for instance, he will, but he certainly doesn't emphasize it. He has some sort of Jewish identification, but I think it's much weaker in him than in most other Jews. And basically, he's writing things as he sees it with a certain amount of censor, like self-censorship, where he's most of the time not pointing out the Jewish nature of things, but from time to time does.
I would consider you an expert on Cohen, yeah, because you followed him and you mentioned him a lot. And I wanted to leave you with this. I did listen to all your interview with Richard Spencer. I do look at Spencer a little differently now, as someone who's putting our talking points into the mainstream. That's all I got, Doctor.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your call, Jeremy, and we'll be right back after the break. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50...
Back to the show, National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Timothy from Washington. Timothy, welcome to the show.
Yes, Dr. Slattery, always a great program, but I think here's where you missed the mark, and probably the clock's going to get me. So do we got 2 minutes?
Got about 4 minutes.
Okay, I only need two. So let me walk you along here, and this is where you and a lot of people are actually missing the bigger picture. And so you would agree with me that evil, sort of the mystery of evil, evil has a power or an intelligence in itself, in the sense that if two men are about to attempt a task and one doesn't have any governors or morals or religion to prevent them from accessing a whole bunch of other nefarious options, that at the end of the day, the person who's actually more evil will actually overcome the person who is stricken with sort of rules to the game. So you would agree evil has a power, right? We only got 4 minutes.
I pretty much agree with that. I mean, I would just say that cheaters have an advantage, but it's
right,
pretty much
right.
The same
okay.
thing.
Right. So you agree with that. So, and you would also agree with the internet, there's been a lot more light that has shined on everything. And so now we can see clearly the field or the reality that we're in than we were 20 years ago. It doesn't matter what conspiracy, what information, we can see more now than we can 20 years ago. Correct.
Well, we can see more. Some of what we see it includes disinformation that we probably wouldn't have seen before,
right.
New types of disinformation.
Right. So, and then finally, and then I'm going to get to my point, you would agree that according to genetics, kind of well known, a Somalian, they clock in about 80 IQ, and then you got sort of the European, he clocks in around 100, 110. Asians, they're about the same thing. So basically, among the groups, the demographics, according to the genetics, by and large, there are different levels of IQ. You would agree with that?
There is a different distribution of cognitive abilities based on race or ancestry,
right.
And it is at least partly genetic. So, yeah, that's a
right.
fair statement.
So what happens? So here's my point. What happens if there's actually two bloodlines on the earth, and this one particular bloodline, they actually, according to their genetic markers, they have a propensity or they have the ability to actually, and because we know our world is just not physical, can actually manifest or fit an intelligent, higher intelligent, evil presence in which that would give them an advantage in this world. So if you're what some people call the serpent seed line or the Canaanite bloodline, suppose these genetic markers are not just in the Jews, although that's where it metastasized, but let's say that it's actually spread among lots of different groups and leaders. That would actually account for what we're dealing with. In other words, the serpent seed line, there's two bloodlines on the earth. It's just not the Jews. It's the people who got those genetic markers, whether they're Asian, whether they're George Bush, or whatever, who can access those evil forces.
Okay. Well,
that was my point.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So we're out of time, and you're proposing a genetic marker. I mean, we do know about people's ancestry. This type of genetic marker, that's going to take a little bit more research before we're really going to be able to talk specifically about that. But thank you for your call.
Always a great show.
Thank you. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.